spiritualist medium. I can't wait to chat. Are you going to stay? You're going to stay there as well, Sylvia, so you can join in.
Oh yeah. Well, no. Let's give Andrea her time, and you'll be very surprised. And I do not want to interrupt, and I'll be seeing Andrea at some point. Hope she can.
Okay. Right. We're going to go over to the news, and then we're going to be back with more from the book club.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On the hour across Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM News.
From the Sky News Centre at midday, the Prime Minister has suffered a big blow in his promise to stop the boats. The Supreme Court's ruled that his policy of sending asylum seekers who arrive in the UK by unauthorised means to Rwanda is unlawful. Rishi Sunak says this is not the outcome he wanted and that his government will consider its next steps. Tafiq Hussain from Duncan Lewis Solicitors has been speaking outside the court.
It's a reminder that no one is above the law. We can hope now that our clients and many others can dream of a safer and better future.
Israel insists its forces have not been involved in combat inside the biggest hospital in Gaza. Its military says it's found weapons and what it calls terror infrastructure. Hamas denies it's using it as a command centre. Labour says the Prime Minister shouldn't be popping champagne corks, despite Rishi Sunak declaring he's delivered on his target to halve inflation. The Office for National Statistics says the rate at which prices are rising has slowed to 4.6%. Chancellor Jeremy Hunt insists the government won't get complacent.
There's lots more work to do. We still have to bring inflation down to its target level, but now we are beginning to win the battle against inflation. We can move to the next part of our economic plan.
Greta Thunberg has pleaded not guilty to a public order offence after she was arrested at a demonstration last month. The environmental activist has denied the charge at a London court. A man's been released on bail, having been arrested on suspicion of manslaughter over the death of ice hockey player Adam Johnson. The 29-year-old died after his neck was cut while playing for the Nottingham Panthers last month. And David Beckham and Sachin Tendulkar were in the stands in Mumbai to watch India's Virat Kohli become the first cricketer to score a 50th one-day international century. He did it.
And now I'm joined by our guest of a book club. It is Andrea Miles, who is an author, astrologer and spiritualist medium. We're going to be talking about her books as well. So a very good afternoon. How are you, Andrea?
Hi, Michelle. Thanks for having me on. And thank you to Sylvia as well for inviting me on as well. I'm very well, thank you.
So when did you first get the writing bug?
Oh, it was quite late in my life, to be honest. So I would say it was about 15 years ago when I first started writing articles for the journal, which is a members magazine for the Astrological Association of Great Britain. And then I expanded that into writing for some astrology groups as well. And then expanded further by writing for different fan clubs, I guess, fan club magazines, just because I got bored, basically, with some of the content that I was reading inside. And so I thought maybe I could bring something different to the magazine and something to the members and readers. So, for example, I did some articles for Susie Quattro. I also did Maxie Miller and also Ken Russell and all kinds of other people, really. So it was a way of kind of talking about, you know, our passion in the subject, but also introducing readers and members to astrology in a way that wasn't kind of preachy, but just quite accessible, I think. Well, I hope anyway.
Now, astrology, we would think back to when you maybe would have looked in the newspapers and say for Aquarius, this is what might happen.
Definitely.
For the week. And that's what we were used to. But I mean, I remember one of my friends used to get me a chart done when I was probably in my early sort of 20s. And it was a real, you know, you had to put in when your, I think, star sign is, there's all different stars and the moon and all sorts of things to actually get your precise reading. So how did you get involved in it? Because it is very, very complicated.
Oh, tell me, it's so complicated. So my bug and obsession, if you like, with astrology started when I was a child. And it was, as you say, through the newspaper astrology, but not through me reading it. My mother was opening the newspaper one day and called out, oh, Leo, and then, you know, read what the interpretation was for that day. And I had no clue. So I asked her what that was all about. So she told me. And to be honest, I felt quite deprived and almost denied that I'd not been told about this thing called astrology and our star signs. So then it was just like red rag, literally, to a bull, because I'm a Taurus. And I just loved buying books on astrology, and also because I'm quite curious, I used to buy lots of biographies and autobiographies as well, just so that I could find out what a person's sun sign was. So that went on for quite a number of years, and I saw different magazines like Prediction, Mind, Body and Spirit, where you could read all about astrology. And fortunately, being based in London, I was lucky to be able to visit, you know, the esoteric bookshops such as Watkins and Treadwell's and the Atlantic bookshop. And so I kind of self-taught myself as far as I could go. But never really wanted to do it to like a diploma level or degree level, because my mind's very active and I get distracted very quickly. Yeah. And I just didn't think that I would have, the concentration span needed, if you like.
Yeah.
However, the stars looked down because in approximately 2009, I was made aware of a brilliant teacher and professional astrologer called Kathy Rowan. Good morning, Kathy, if you're listening. And she brilliantly, I did a correspondence course with her. And so, honestly, I've really got a fear about numbers, was rubbish at maths, all this kind of thing. Yeah. And when I used to see pictures of, as you said earlier, like the birth charts or natal charts, as astrologers call them, I kind of like got really frightened by all the numbers and kind of science of it all, I guess. But what Kathy did for me was, all her students, was to bit by bit, break it down into little chunks. And so that is how I kind of came to better understand the birth chart, and also ways of being able to do forecasts using astrological software. So, for example, if any of your listeners are interested, there's the one that I use is astro.com. So that's www.astro.com. And there you can do all kinds of things. But for me, as I said earlier, I'm really curious, some would say nosy. Yeah. So I kind of have based my interest around natal charts and forecasts, if you like. But there's a whole wealth of different things that you can do with astrology. So, yeah, it's down to the person, I guess, how far you want to take it, but it's so helpful, it's so valuable, and really helps with planning as well. So being a practical sign, being an earth sign, a Taurus, obviously you gain a certain amount of knowledge. So for me, I want to do something practical with it. And within my own birth chart, it says a couple of times about, you know, there's like potential and symbolism there of sharing the knowledge, but enjoying the knowledge, sharing the knowledge with others.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I started veering towards books. Mm. And I kind of developed this concept of where, if you've seen the books, so there's the person and there's the birth chart. And there's also a kind of fairly concise biography about all the people that I've written about. And then what I've done is kind of, if you like, illustrated the astrology in action. Mm. And that way, I hope for myself and for readers, you get a better kind of sense of what that person was about, their character, their qualities, their strengths, their challenges, how you'd have handled that. And also, obviously, because the people that I've written about are now deceased, you can do a certain amount of what I call hindsight astrology. So when certain events have happened in their lives, you can look back and say, yeah, probably because of the energy or symbolism of, you know, whatever it might be. I've kind of like can't stop now because my brain has been used to working in a certain way. I just kind of keep creating. And so I've always got a new person in mind, if you like, ready for the next book.
I was just going to say, your most recently published book in 2023, yeah. Pamela Coleman-Smith and yes. Madge Gill, Astrology, Second Sight and Art, which is on yes. Green Magic. You can go all the W's, greenmagicpublishing.com. And you've published also Famous Occultist and Witches, their yes. biographies and their birth charts. So you've got, yes. It's Aleister Crowley, isn't it? I think I've read about him.
Yes.
Lady Harris and Betty May. Yes. And you're currently researching and working on a fourth book as well.
I am indeed. Do you want me to tell you about
yes,
the fourth
please, book? Yes, please, yeah.
Okay, a little heads up. And I'm still busy working away. I've done all the research for it, but it's just all that fine detail of, you know, threading things together, really. So it's a departure from the usual people that I've written about in terms of those that have been involved with the occult, spiritualism, or, you know, esotericism. And this one is going to be about Brian Jones, the original founder and leader of the Rolling Stones.
Yes, yeah.
Now, many people would have or know of him through all the information around, you know, his death and just reading about his addictions. And it's quite interesting that recently you've probably seen in the media how the Stones are kind of back in action. They never really go away, do they?
Yeah, we're playing them actually, yeah.
yeah. So Brian's there in essence with them, which is lovely. But what I wanted to bring to the table was that in actual fact, he was not just, you know, a drug and drink addict and a brilliant, brilliant musician, but he was very sensitive and psychic himself and used to see spirit. Now you see, I've not seen myself any books that specifically focus on that area of his life. And being a Stones fan, especially their 60s music when, you know, when Brian was still around with them, I kept coming across bits and pieces that said about these visions that he'd had and how tuned in that he was to the world, to the spiritual world, and very, very psychic. And the thing with having those kind of energies and qualities is that you really do have to look after yourself just so that you can kind of, you know, operate at maximum function, like all of us, I guess. But the thing with Brian, bless him, was that he was quite a sickly person as well, right from the get-go.
Yeah.
He lived with asthma, he had lots of allergies. And then as he got older, all that relentless touring, it just took its toll, like it does on many creatives and artists. And so then when he took to drink and drugs as well, it just went on a different path altogether. But we owe a lot to Brian, not just because of the brilliant music that he's brought to the world, but also because of his influence in what I guess you could call world music. He went to Marrakesh he went a couple of times into Morocco, and he found it a really spiritual place. And there are a band of musicians there called the Djoukan musicians, who came from the mountains, and they were a very ancient tribe, and they used to worship the god Pan, So Brian tried to go there at the time when these when the celebrations, if you like, for Pan were coming into play. And he was so moved by the spirit of these musicians and also of their kind of philosophy and beliefs. And what he did is with the, you know, basic technology that he had with him at the time, he made some recordings of them and brought them home with him and on some, you know, cassette tapes. But sadly, he didn't see that come to pass. He passed in the July of 1969, and it was in 1971, the Rolling Stones management had got hold of these tapes, and they sat on them for a long while, but eventually in 1971, they released them. And so what you got was a beautiful album called Brian Jones Presents the Pipes of Pan at Jujuka. And so in that respect, he was quite innovative. Sorry, I can never say that word. You know, quite outstanding in bringing that type of music to the world. You might call it ethnic music. You might call it world music.
Yeah.
But even today, that, those musicians who are kind of like, they were like family, the family kind of all joined in the music. It's like a family thing. And even today, they celebrate and honour what Brian Jones did for them in terms of their music.
That's really interesting. And that's going to be your next, basically the next book. And is that coming out in 2024? Is that earlier or sort of mid?
Ish. I'd say hopefully, fingers crossed. You can never tell with writing and publishing and life events.
Yeah.
But I would say hopefully the earlier part of next year, all being well.
Excellent. Now, I just have to, because we will run out of time, and I do want to ask you this, because you are a spiritualist medium. So yes. Tell us when that happened for you. Tell me what is a spiritualist medium and the spiritualist church?
Well, it's hard to define actually when exactly that happened, because I mean, I've been a spiritualist for as long as I can remember now, and I was married in a spiritualist church as well. But it was something that became in this country particularly popular during the First and Second World Wars, when people went missing, you know, people were killed. And there were thousands and thousands of families, as you can imagine, who were devastated by this. And up popped spiritualist churches. Before that, I think I'm right in saying it was mainly like home circles where people would meet in, say, their parlours or their living rooms, and they would hold, you know, like seances or maybe do individual one-to-one readings for each other. But for me, people forget, we're still ridiculed even to this day. And you wouldn't believe the amount of effort and campaigning that went into spiritualism being able to be represented at Remembrance Day. So the Spiritualist National Union and their pioneers only fairly recently campaigned so that spiritualists could be, you know, represented at the cenotaph. So it was lovely to see their president there on Sunday just gone. So the other thing that a lot of people might not realise is that there's a huge philosophy to it as well, which is really important. And so if you went to a spiritualist service, generally what you would see is the chairperson on the platform, the speaker or medium who's going to be taking the service, and there'd be an opening prayer, there'd be maybe the church notices, there'd be an address, which is where the inspirational speaking philosophy comes in, then the chairperson might do a small reading, and then the time will be handed over to the medium to deliver what we call the evidence of mediumship, where we are required to demonstrate evidence that there is only life after life and that life comes in love and nothing else. And we are able to connect to who we're drawn to in the congregation, and give messages of love, upliftment and hope from loved ones, friends, people that they've known through their life who have moved on into another sphere of spirit. So it's quite important work, and I feel very passionate and responsible in that work. There's a lot of healing within the movement as well. That can be done just through the divine service, as I've just explained, just through the words of comfort and upliftment, but also the healers as well, because there's also special services for healers where qualified healers are able to provide healing to those in pain, be that in mind, body or spirit. And that is also exceptional work and something that is often undervalued, I feel.